This is a Glass Box Media Podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Welcome to This Week in Travel, the show that talks to some of the most interesting and notable travelers in the world. Learn about the top travel stories from the world of travel, get valuable travel tips, and have some fun in the process. Now here are your hosts, Gary Arndt and Jen Leo.
This week's episode is sponsored by Expedia's Out Travel the System podcast. I'm going to take you a minute to tell you about a podcast we think you'll really like, Out Travel the System. The podcast draws on the deep foundations of travel data provided by Expedia to provide insight on overall travel trends and to show you how to save big on your next trip. That can mean anything from what time of the week or year to book your stay to staying ahead of popular trends. You know, we pride ourselves on being able to give you the inside scoop on what's going on right now in the world of travel, and that's why we think you might enjoy listening to the show. Out Travel the System also specializes in exploring what we love most about travel, from how it benefits us or the economy, to living vicariously through people who've had experiences you may never have dreamed of, like camping in the middle of an African forest. Get all of this and more by finding Out Travel the System on your favorite podcast player. Like and subscribe to get the newest episode right when they come out. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of This Week in Travel. My name is Gary Arndt, coming to you from a sunny northeast Wisconsin. With me again, as usual, Jen Leo. How are you doing, Jen?
Doing great. Sunny in SoCal.
You know, there's been all this talk about how the summer has been so hot. It's almost been a little bit below normal temperatures up here. It's like it's been really nice. You know, we've had nice amounts of rain. The corn's really high. Everything's doing great. I don't know. Everything doesn't revolve around the West Coast.
It has not been hot for us either, but I think our guest is going to have a different story.
That is true. She is the first-time guest on the show. She's a writer for the Los Angeles Times, and she is the editor of the Wild newsletter, which talks about the great outdoors in Southern California. Please welcome Mary Forgone. How are you doing, Mary?
I'm doing well. It's so nice to be here.
Why don't we just get right into it then? Why don't you start out with a description of what you're doing for the Wild newsletter?
Sure. So the Wild is a newsletter, and I'll just say right up front, the big plug, it's open to anyone. You don't have to be a subscriber of the LA Times. And it has just been a real hit with readers. Truly, the Wild is a chance for us to introduce Angelenos to their own wild backyard. And it sounds so basic, but so many people just don't know how much, you know, there are so many hiking and cycling and running opportunities in Southern California. So that's kind of the genesis of it. We had decided to launch the Wild just right around March of 2020. Then the pandemic hit and we were like, oh, no, people can't go anywhere. And it turned out we wound up launching in June, so we're over the year mark. And it turned out that the outdoors was the only place to go, the only thing that people could do. So we were off and running. And the one thing, you know, every issue has, you know, at least four or five things that you can go out and do this week, and just all kinds of little stuff that we highlight. You know, big stuff, little stuff. You were just talking about the weather. And one of the things that I write about that's coming out this Thursday, comes out every Thursday, is we do have a monsoon season. It's a monsoon season that covers the Southwest, and it's when like Arizona and New Mexico get all their rain. It doesn't work that way for us, but when, you know, super hot air hits cooler air, we get these downpours. And if you're in the outdoors, you really have to know what you're doing. We have some flash flooding and whatnot. So when you're talking about the weather, it's pretty toasty here. And when we get these weird kind of overcast and cloud formations, it probably means it's going to be raining in the mountains. So yeah, so that's a bit of what the wild is about. It's also meant to encourage people to get out. And, you know, this applies to anybody, anywhere. If you haven't explored your wild backyard, and by that, I mean, you know, the area where you live, local parks, the mountains, the prairies, wherever you are, it's really a chance to connect. And I think particularly after COVID, people are looking to nature, number one, for something to do where they can go with their families. Number two, they're looking to kind of make a bond with nature as kind of a healing, a quiet place, a place to not think about, you know, wearing a mask and having to be around a lot of people. So that's kind of what the wild has been about. And it is just a real joy every week to do this thing.
Mary, I'm so happy to have you on the show. You know, I'm a big fan of yours and I absolutely love the wild. I also want to tell people that it's not what you would expect from the Los Angeles Times or a traditional newsprint outlet. The wild is hip. It's cool. The graphics. I'm absolutely in love with your illustrator, Micah Flewellen. He really, really. And please tell Micah what a huge fan I am.
Okay, you're doing a way better job than me of selling this. Thank you.
You're welcome. But seriously, one of the things that impressed me the most, and Mary is being modest about it being for the readers of LA, because this the content in here is for anybody in California, really, or on the West Coast. And we get so many Arizona tourists that I feel like lots of neighboring states could use this as well. There is so many things to do in here, so many things that you've never even thought of, or things that you might have wanted to do, but it's a must for anybody in this general area. But I want to talk more about how hip it is.
Thank you so much. Go ahead.
You're welcome. It really has a feeling of a youthful audience in not just the images, but also the topics. So I think recently in one of your newsletters, you said something about the Shangri-La of desert weirdness. And you talked about cactuses. And you sort of lead people with things to do, three things to do this week outside. And it really speaks to people of all ages. And I just really love the youthful vibe to it, Mary.
Thank you so much. You know, that is exactly what we're going for in terms of keeping it brief, keeping it punchy. Micah does a fantastic job with the graphics because I think they really draw you in. But that is exactly, and I'm so glad you brought up, you know, the California-centric, or LA-centric. But it really is, boy, for travelers who want to come to this area and hook into a hike or a cool cycling event or a running event, it's also good. And also, we do tips on, you know, all kinds of bear safety, things like that, just general stuff about the outdoors. But I love your kind words. Thank you so much. I'm going to give the, anyone can sign up, latimes.com/the-wild.
Okay. So Mary, also, Gary and I were actually wondering about the LA Times travel section. Can you give us the scoop on what's going on? Is there still a print section or is it all digital only right now?
Okay, so the travel section, as what we call in journalism a standalone section, was for years and years and years a print section of its own. Roughly about a year ago, we decided to merge.
And now we can't hear you.
We decided to merge with our lifestyle section called Saturday. So the main print section is Saturday, but it also includes travel stories, For example, Christopher Reynolds, our travel writer, recently went on a rail bike tour in the Redwoods up around Fort Bragg. And it's a fabulous story. So, yes, we post everything online, of course, but we are still in the print section. We're just combined. So it's kind of a lifestyle and travel. And it is called Saturday.
Okay, I'm going to have to amend my subscription because I've just been getting the Sunday paper. And but I've been getting
there.
But
you
now
go.
The LA Times also has a more general travel newsletter called Escapes. But oh. I'm quite partial to The Wild instead.
Oh, you are so kind. My colleague Rachel Schmelzer does a great job of keeping readers informed. She just did. I think her last newsletter was about where to go if you want to stay in a lighthouse. Northern California has a string of lighthouses where you can spend the night. I think both of these newsletters are out to kind of generate some adventure, generate some excitement, despite COVID and the times we're in, about travel. We are so scrupulous about, you know, what you can do now, what is open now, and you know, just to make sure that we give readers good information. But I really think the demand, especially now, is higher than ever for outdoors, for travel, for all of the above.
Well, now you've been doing a bit of traveling yourself. So let us know what your pandemic travels have been like and what you've been doing lately and also what's coming up.
It was a hard decision, Jen, to go back, you know, to decide to fly. I think everybody had that internal gut check. You know, when would it be right to fly? When would I feel comfortable getting on a plane? So, 3 weeks ago, I went to Alaska. And I must say, it was a land tour of Alaska. I had done a cruise years ago, and it was just fantastic. Alaska wasn't quite prepared I think they thought they were going to sit out another season, another cruise season, which is crucial to many of the little towns. And in fact, cruises kind of surprisingly restarted. So Alaska was still gearing up to get ready. And as a result, we found it somewhat difficult. Some restaurants never opened in smaller towns, and some were only staffed at half. But they did their best. One of the things we did, you know, car rentals. Oh, nobody can get a car rental anywhere. They're so expensive. We took the train, and the Alaska Rail was beautiful. So we took my friends and I took a train from Anchorage to Seward and then again from Talkeetna back to Anchorage. And each was just beautiful. The Seward run goes along the coast. Very affordable. The rental companies, we couldn't even get a car, but if we were waitlisted, it was like $250 a day. I don't know if that's still the going rate, but the train travel, I think it was like $130 each for a ticket. So it was very affordable, very beautiful. The glacier boat tours out of Seward are an absolute must. And a ranger at Kenai Fjords Park said, you know, go as long and as far as you can. So we took we signed up for the 8-hour, and you really get a fantastic view into the fjords. I mean, it was just breathtaking. Also, hiked up Mount Marathon, which is kind of a real landmark in Seward. They've been having this running race to the top of Mount Marathon since 1915. But what was so interesting in Seward, we saw all these banners and all these kind of homemade signs everywhere cheering on Lydia. And of course, it was Lydia. I finally asked Lydia who. And of course, it was Lydia Jacoby, who just won Olympic gold in the 100-meter breaststroke. And the town like couldn't have been more supportive. So she's a hometown girl. And it was just kind of exciting. It kind of got me excited for the Olympics. Talkeetna is another small town. I loved it. It was also kind of reopening slowly, as everything does post-COVID. One of the most interesting things, it is the ranger station in Talkeetna where climbers who are going to climb Denali, which is a technical, very difficult mountain climb, have to go to Talkeetna to get their permits. And one of the things I learned from the rangers, which I found so interesting, is they staff people at the mountain is like 19,000 plus feet high. They staff rangers at 14,500 feet and at 17,500 feet. This is high elevation, high altitude, hard to breathe areas. And they stay up there during the climbing season to assist if anybody has any problems or has, you know, questions or needs evacuation, anything. So I found that fascinating that rangers are on the mountain. The climbing season is very small, very short. I think it's like May to the end of June. And outside the ranger station in Talkeetna, they keep a running total of people on the mountain, people who summited today. And I found that kind of thrilling. So I thought Alaska was a good choice for a first trip, especially from the West Coast. It was easy to get, you know, quick to get to. And with the trains, and we did some buses as well, it was pretty easy to get around.
Mary, let's talk some more about Southern California. As someone who does not live in Southern California, I often view it as kind of a dystopian wasteland of freeways. So what are some of the more popular destinations for people that live in the area, and how long does it take to get there?
Okay, so here's the deal. I think LA is a fantastic outdoors destination, and I think it's just one of those things, you know, people think like what you thought, the freeways, Disneyland, but really, if you're a hiker or a cyclist or a runner or anybody who just wants to be out in nature fast, it's a fabulous, fabulous place. And I think it's one of those things that I strive every week in the wild to kind of shine a light on. So I'm just going to start with Griffith Park. Griffith Park, it's like one of the largest municipal parks in the U.S. It's fabulous. It's probably a 15-minute ride from downtown, easy to get to. It has so many trails. And one of the ones that I absolutely recommend, you can hike to the Hollywood sign. Now, it's not the Hollywood sign you think of where you're in front of the letters. It's actually a hike where you come up from behind the letters and you really get a sense of just how huge. I think each letter is 45 feet tall. And along the way, you get these fantastic vistas of Los Angeles. One of my favorite things to do in Griffith Park is there's night hiking there. There's so much ambient light from the city of LA, you don't even need a flashlight, summer or winter. And the park is open till 10 p.m. So you can go up at like 5 or 6 o'clock in the evening, go up to either the Hollywood sign or Mount Hollywood, which is about a 5-mile round trip hike, a good workout, maybe 1500 feet again. You can go up there and see all of LA, all of the lights twinkling. It's just a fabulous view. And the other thing about going it in the evening in summer is you avoid the big heat. So I'm a big Griffith Park fan, lots of things to see there. Any visitor can find it on a map, drive up to the trailhead and start hiking. Our second on the west side for people staying, you know, somewhat near, you know, Westwood, Beverly Hills, that area, Santa Monica Mountains National Recreation Area. It too is huge. And it's this really beautiful, it's a fabulous winter destination because it's low elevation, but temperatures stay nice. So you're hiking in, you know, like 60, 70 degrees in winter. Right now it's pretty toasty, but really, really beautiful. In fact, we have a through trail that most people don't know about called the Backbone Trail, which goes for like 65 miles. So you can walk across this amazing mountain range. And one of the funniest parts, I wrote about this in our hiking issue, is that you go by these amazing Malibu mansions and you get coastal views. But so you get a little bit of the man-made stuff as well as a lot of natural beauty. And the last area I would point people, well, not the last, but I would point people to the Angeles National Forest, which is north of LA, easy access, has has very high peaks. If you want to do 10,000 foot peaks, Mount Baldy, or if you just, you know, want to get out and stretch your legs, there are wonderful hiking opportunities there. And then I have to make a pitch for the desert, only in winter. Although I understand there's a lot of what they call heat tourists. I don't go to the desert when it's triple digit. I don't think it would be healthy for me and for the kinds of activities I want to do. But the desert in, you know, late fall and winter are just fantastic. You know, Death Valley, Joshua Tree, Anza Borrego State Park. These are places where you see the most amazing formations. Some of the Star Wars films, in fact, were filmed in Death Valley on some of those flat washes. So there's a lot to do outdoors here. There's a lot for travelers who come here. There's a lot for locals. And that's my thing, is to just shine a light on that every week.
You're doing great, Mary. What about the readers? Are you getting, what kind of reader feedback have you been getting, and are they requesting any info? And what is your audience like now that things are more digital?
So interesting. First off, this has been like a dream for me. You know, you write stories in the LA Times and you get a lot of feedback, not always good. The Wild has just struck a nerve. I have never had such happy readers. The readers have written to me and said, you were my COVID buddy and got me through this. And I just was so touched. So readers absolutely have responded to this. And mostly what they're asking for is more of the real nuts and bolts information. Where can I go? You didn't write about Orange County hikes. Well, we just wrote about Orange County hikes. In response to what readers ask for. So they're asking for more places to go, more places to explore, which I think is just a great sign. I also am finding people who, particularly with the digital audience, who are like, I've never camped. I have two kids. What do I do? And I will answer the email to the best that I can, but I also keep that in mind for stories and tips. Because a lot of us are beginners and there's no great handbook. When people say they want to start hiking, for example, I point them to like Meetup or the local Sierra Club, the Angeles Chapter Sierra Club, to go on group hikes and start to kind of get their confidence. In cycling, we have cycling groups that people can join, and we have Ciclovia, which is happens just about every other month, and they're just restarting, where all the streets are shut down and you can walk or cycle. And so it's just, I think readers are looking for ways to get more engaged, places to go, and even asking, particularly in California, what parks to go to. I have to tell you, I think just about everyone I know went to Utah during these pandemic times. Utah seems to have, I know that Arches National Park had to close. Sometimes very early in the morning, they were at capacity. People went to Bryce. People went to Zion, which closed one day because they had flash flooding. So people are definitely getting out there, and I think they want more ways to interact, more ways to get into nature, more ways to have an adventure.
So how far out are you reaching outside of California? Are you hitting Oregon? Are you talking about Utah in the paper? Are you talking about Arizona? How far out do you reach?
We do. We really look to, and I think the same is true of the travel newsletter, we really look to the West. So we will feature, for example, Chris has done some Northern California stories. We have absolutely included some of the park closures and whatnot in our list. So, and when we do ski stuff, we include, you know, the broader, not just because Southern California only has like a handful. So yeah. And I think as we pick up more of those readers, our content will be driven by that and become a little bit more expansive. But truly the meat of it is for Southern Californians to, you know, go out and have things to do in their area.
I just want to say I visit a lot of National Park Service sites around the country. And my last trip to L.A., I actually went up to the Santa Monica Mountains National Recreation Area. And I was actually rather surprised at how I'm not going to say – I mean, it's a rural area, but you're really kind of – you're out in the mountains. There's no urbanization out there, and it wasn't really that far away from the rest of Los Angeles. And I was actually kind of surprised by it.
Oh, Gary, I'm so glad you raised that point because I forget to say some of the most obvious things. That's the incredible thing about L.A. I have been on trails in the Santa Monica Mountains where I've been the only person on that trail. And I just sit there and I go, oh, my God, of the millions and millions and millions of people in Southern California, I'm the only one that picked this trail today. And during COVID, I felt even more comfortable. You know, it felt even better to be in such a remote location. And to me, that's the beauty of LA's wild spaces. Same thing with the Angeles National Forest in the north. You can be on a trail and, you know, pretty much, you know, maybe see a handful of people, but it, you get that remoteness. And I don't know too many urban areas that have the wild so close. Now, when I say so close, we are used to driving in LA, but you can absolutely drive half an hour to 45 minutes from downtown and be somewhere that feels very remote. And to me, that's really special. And I'm not talking about, you know, sculpted parks and parks that are designed with trails for you. I'm talking about wild places. And that's what I love about LA is that ability to just go and be in that.
And I think part of it has to do with being surrounded by desert. One of the things I've noticed when I drive out of LA is that unlike being in, say, the Midwest or really anywhere else in the country, when the city ends, it kind of ends. Like it's – you don't have farms forever. It just you just – there's city and then there's nothing because there's nothing – you know, you're in the Mojave Desert. Exactly. And there's also some great there's a National Park Service site in the Mojave Desert. And then there's also probably, I guess, the closest national park to you would either be Death Valley or Joshua Tree.
Yeah, Joshua Tree is a little bit closer, and it has seen its visitation just, you know, kind of go off the charts. So people have definitely discovered Joshua Tree. But, you know, you're right. LA is so sprawling. Once you kind of hit the urban edge and you're out there, it's like, wow, this is kind of remote. I think the deserts are just really special places. You know, you mentioned Mojave. I love going out to Kelso, and there are other areas. I mean, you have to be careful and make sure you have all your supplies and whatnot. But I think very few people have visited the Mojave, and it is a fantastic area. So if anyone comes out and thinks Joshua Tree is too crowded, look on your map and look at the Mojave Desert and the Mojave National Reserve. It's just a great, great area to explore.
Mary, I might be stretching things a bit for you, but in your travels for checking out all these outdoor places and these off the beaten path hikes, have you found any super cute old rural towns or downtowns, like little old main streets with really good breakfast diners? I'm always on the hunt for a good breakfast diner somewhere out. Like if you go for an early morning hike, are you following it up with a brunch or anything like that? Any towns I should know about?
Interesting question. I will tell you that, you know, I'm always usually racing to get back to work after I hike, or, you know, in the evening racing to get home. Breakfast hikes. We did a, just as an aside, we did a story that appeared in our hiking issue, and anybody can read this stuff, latimes.com/hiking, where we paired like 22 trails with the sandwiches you should grab and bring on that hike. So it was kind of an interest. Readers really liked it.
I love it. I think more pieces about that where you're pairing it with food, like, or drinks, right? Where's the best microbrew that you can hit up after a long hike, or where's the best breakfast burrito before or after your hike?
Exactly, because it kind of completes the adventure. I will give a shout out. I love, there is in Griffith Park in what is called the Ferndale area, there's a little bit, and Ferndale is this beautiful, it is exactly what its name implies. It was planted with ferns, plus there were native ferns about a century ago. So it's just a beautiful wooded, green, tropical kind of area. And as you go in this little area of Griffith Park, there is a small Trails Cafe. So I would give them a shout out. And to me, it's always kind of a surprise. And it's nice to just be able to find a place without having to leave, you know, the hiking venue. So I would give a shout out to Trails. But I'm going to have to give that more thought. I don't think I stopped for breakfast enough.
That's okay. I'll look for it in a future newsletter.
Exactly.
Mary, there's one thing I wanted to ask you about. I read in your bio that every year you climb Mount Whitney. And for those of you who don't know, Mount Whitney is the highest point in the continental United States. In fact, it kind of overlooks Death Valley almost.
Yes.
Tell us about climbing Mount Whitney. It's not really a climb. It's not like
it's a
crampons and axes or anything.
No.
Tell us what goes into it.
I think everyone should put this on their bucket list. So it's about 14,500 feet thereabouts is the summit. It is about 4 hours north of Los Angeles, outside of the town of Lone Pine. And it is just a fabulous experience. Clearly, I do it every year. In fact, I am leaving next week to do Mount Whitney. I was lucky enough to get permits. Getting permits, you have to start in February. You can go on the Inyo National Forest site, but there are also walk-up permits. But anyway, the trail is very interesting. You think it's this remote, you know, peak, but it is not. It's a little more like the 405 freeway. You can hike the mountain in a day. I have done that, where you're doing 11 miles each way. So it's a 22-mile day, but you're at elevation. So you start right around 8,600 feet, and you're going all the way up to 14,500. It's a lot in a day. I will be on this trip, and last year, you can also backpack on the mountain. There are three or four camps where you can stay at. And what the backpacking does, it really helps you acclimate. So I will probably sleep at my first camp at 10,000, my second camp at 12,000, then do my summit and come down. It's just beautiful. When you get to the top of Mount Whitney, you literally look into the heart of the Sierra. Every Sierra peak, it is just, and you can, you know, from areas of this trail, you do look down on Lone Pine. It's just amazing. They just ran one of the races I have been so interested in. I wrote about it in the wild. It's called the Badwater 135. And they just ran it. I know they didn't have it during COVID last year. And basically, people start at Badwater, lowest point in the U.S., and they run up to the Whitney Portal, which is at about 8,600, 8,800 feet. And they are running 135 miles through the desert up to the trail that leads up Mount Whitney. It is an excruciating race. They are often starting in heat, you know, 90 or above, and they often are in temperatures of 90 and above. But those dedicated runners do it. It's kind of amazing.
Okay, so shall we go on to our destination picks? What do you think, Gary? Are you ready for that, or do you want to hear more about?
Yeah, we can do that. Wild? And I'll go first. Because I have a Southern California pick that I think, I'm guessing Ooh. Both of you may not have heard of. It is a National Park Service site, but it is clearly the most obscure National Park Service site in Southern California, because it's really hard to get to. There's no visitor center, there are no facilities, and there's nothing. It is the Castle Mountains National Monument. It is completely surrounded by the Mojave National Recreation Area. And the only way to get to this national monument is you actually have to drive into Nevada briefly and then take a road from the Nevada side of the border, because it borders Nevada, to then go into Castle Mountains. And really all you're going to see is when you enter it, when you enter the national monument, you're actually crossing the border back in California. You'll see a sign and that's it. Otherwise, it's a dirt road. You kind of need an off-road vehicle to get there. But it is one of the places that park collectors, you know, it's one of the more challenging places to visit. Not super challenging. You just kind of need to drive there. But it's definitely something if you kind of want out of the way places to check out. Castle Mountains National Monument.
Nice, Gary. I haven't heard of it, but I bet Mary has.
That's a really good one. I have heard of it, but I have not visited. So now,
yeah, most people haven't visited because it's really hard to visit.
Right. And I think I'm guessing probably around 6 years ago, it became a national monument, 5 or 6 years ago. So it's new-ish, but great tip, Gary.
All right. Okay. Jen, what do you got for us?
Sure. Well, Mary, I will admit that I am not a big hiker, but I did take this one hike ages and ages ago, and it was gorgeous. It was in Walla Walla. Have you heard of Walla Walla, Oregon?
Yeah, Washington.
Is it Washington? Washington. Yeah. I was in Oregon at the time, but we crossed over. WallaWalla.org, and they have a hiking section on their Visit Walla Walla website, and it has tons and tons and tons of hikes. I think I don't know if I did the South Fork or the North Fork, but it was so long. It was really, really long and just gorgeous. And I recently, so in remembering about this hike, I looked at their website. Now I was there, it has to be maybe 20 years ago or so. And now I looked at their website to see what it was like, to see what their hiking options were. And this, I can't believe I haven't heard more people talk about this. What an amazing town with tons of wineries, lots of restaurant, lots of things to do, from not just outdoor things, but also family friendly, golf, hiking, museums, spas and wellness. And I was like, holy cow, that little tiny town that I had hiked at so long ago is now a destination that I would actually really like to go at my age and station in life right now.
Wow, that sounds fabulous. Another thing I haven't done. So I will put that on the list.
Cool. You've told us lots of destinations, Mary, but have you got one more for our tip section?
I do. And Gary inspired me. It just came into my brain. This is what I would call a micro adventure. It's easy. A couple hours drive. Well, maybe more in the 4 hour range from LA. It is called Amboy Crater, A-M-B-O-Y. It is in the Mojave. Gary inspired me. And it is this wonderful, it's a pretty easy hike. I think it's like 5 miles round trip, where you walk out into the desert, and then you come to this unbelievable cinder cone. And the crater is pretty impressive. And if you go during wildflower season, and there are flowers all around, it's just such a great spot. So that would be my pick. Save it for winter, late fall or winter, because it's too hot now. But that's my little micro adventure.
All right, let's move into our picks of the week then. Jen, do you got anything for us?
I do. If we're talking about the outdoors, we really like the Eno hammock that you can find at REI. You know, family travel, love having hammock time. So that's been a winner for us, the Eno hammock.
Okay.
Nice.
I'm going to recommend, so when you're traveling, you're always concerned about security things. If you're logging onto a Wi-Fi network that you're never logged into before, tracking issues, and you can definitely use this at home. And I've basically switched my main browser over to this. It's the Brave browser, Brave, B-R-A-V-E. And what it does is it does an exceptionally good job of blocking ads and blocking third-party cookies. And it uses the same basic underlying browser technology that Chrome uses. So if you're a Chrome user, it will bring in all of your extensions, all of the sites you normally visit, your history, everything else, and you can be up and running just like you were using Chrome, but the browser is far more secure, and it's actually faster, and it uses up less server resources. So my computer actually doesn't run as hot and doesn't devote as much power to it. It's definitely something that I'm going to be using when I'm back to traveling. So the Brave browser. And I think a lot of people just, you know, we all kind of use Chrome or Safari or whatever we use out of habit. And there are some really good browsers that are coming out now that offer far better protection and some far better features that you just don't see. So check out the Brave browser.
Wow, Mary. These are tips. Mine is just going to be a real basic tip. I worry when I encourage people to go out on trails that they may get lost or they may, you know, something may happen. Two apps that I really feel people should download on their phones. There are free versions of both. One is AllTrails and the other is Gaia, G-A-I-A. I have bought both on the premium versions because the premium versions allow you to download maps so that you don't have to, so your phone isn't using quite as much juice when you're out on the trail. For me, that's a big problem. I'm always carrying an external battery if I'm navigating with my phone. So these are apps that are pretty easy to use. What I like about them, you know, you can pull up AllTrail and just say nearest hike or hike within X number of miles and you'll get all kinds of, or you can say waterfall hike or whatever. You'll get all kinds of recommendations. And they're pretty, like I say, pretty easy to use and it'll keep you found.
Hey, Mary, do you mean Gaia GPS app?
Yes, yes.
Okay,
that is
cool.
Yes.
Because there's another Gaia app that's all about yoga and meditation. I wasn't sure.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes. Yes, correct. It is the one that provides maps and is all about navigation. Thank you.
Yeah, and they even say they have ski touring.
Yeah, I mean, this is what's so great about these apps is it really allows you to filter to what, you know, what routes you're looking for. So yes, in winter you would use it when you're in snow country. And my understanding, I haven't tried it in other countries, but my understanding is it's maps everywhere.
Yeah, it looks like they've got stuff for fishermen too, or anglers, I mean, and right. Mountain biking, even hunting.
Yeah, so it's a good all-around outdoors app.
All right, let's wrap things up then. Jen, where can people find you online?
Well, you know me. I'm doing most of my stuff on BitCurious Mom because I love the cryptos. And Gary, from our last episode, I still have to send you a tip you in Bitcoin from your other podcast.
Yeah, I was telling you before the show started, I made over 9,000 Satoshis. And a Satoshi, I think, is what, a 10 millionth of a Bitcoin. So it's like $3. But yeah, I actually got it set up, so... we're going to try to get This Week in Travel set up with it, and we'll have more information on it in a future episode. Mary, where can people find you online?
Just sign up, like I said, latimes.com/the-wild. And if you want to message me, it's thewild, all one word, at latimes.com.
Excellent, and we'll have a link to that in the show notes. And as usual, you can find me over at the Everything Everywhere Daily Podcast, where I'm pumping out podcasts every single day. My most recent one was on the Dark Ages and whether they were really that dark. So until next week, stay tuned for another episode of This Week in Travel.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe and leave a review wherever you get your podcasts.